Helen Cordero is an artist that lives among the Conchiti Pueblo Native Americans in New Mexico. And when she was in her mid-40s, she decided she would try her hand with clay pottery. She tried doing jars and bowls and that kind of thing, but it just didn't work out too well, and so she started to do figurines. She started first with animals like birds and frogs and things like that. But then she started to experiment with people. And there was an art collector in Santa Fe, New Mexico, that saw some of her work, thought it was really good, and commissioned her to do a piece of an adult with children. So Cordero started to do work on this figurine, and as she started thinking about how to do this, she remembered a story from when she was a kid. That oftentimes a great memory she had growing up was sitting at the feet of her grandfather, along with her other cousins, and listening to the stories that her grandfather would tell. Her grandfather believed very strongly that the Pueblo way of life would be passed down to the next generation. So many times he would get his grandchildren, children, whoever else he could find to listen, and he'd surround them at his feet, and then he would begin to tell stories. And Cordero decided, I'm going to use that as my inspiration for this next piece that I'm going to make. And she created a figurine that became really popular worldwide, and it's inspired artists all over. It's entitled The Pueblo Storyteller. And if you notice the piece in the middle, the one that Cordero did, there's a couple of interesting elements about it. First of all, if you notice, the storyteller's eyes are closed because he's thinking about the story that he's telling. Secondly, his mouth is open because in Cordero's mind, she remembered her grandfather singing the stories of the past, telling them in song. And then third, if you notice, there's these children. Children in front, children on the side, children in the back, just children all over. And she remembered the children gathering around her grandfather, excited and eager and anxious to hear the stories that their grandfather would tell. And as we think about passing on our faith to the next generation, I wonder if that wouldn't be a good image for us. That as Christians, we need Christian storytellers who will gather up children and grandchildren and friends and neighbors and sit down and pass on the faith and the traditions that we believe to those that are ready to listen. There's a strong connection between story and community. On the one hand, community produces stories. And if you've been a part of any kind of group, whether it's a youth group or a club or some kind of class, you know about this, that when you go on some activity or you go on some trip, it always, that shared experience always brings stories, right? That's the best part about going on a mission trip, the stories you bring back. I'm excited to hear about our stories from the group that went to Ecuador, to hear what strange things they ate and all the kinds of different things they did. And those stories that we have with the youth group or whatever group that we're a part of, they stick with us even longer than the people that are in the story are with us sometimes. Around Christmas time, Lindsay and I and the kids were invited over to Tim and Lindsay Kennedy's house to have dinner. And Lindsay Kennedy, her brother-in-law was my roommate in college. And they were going to be in town, their family was going to be in town, and so they invited us over so that I could see him. I hadn't seen him in a couple years. And so when we got together eating, guess what we started doing? Started telling stories, all the wild and crazy things that we did in college. And you know, I did some wild and crazy things, as you can imagine. But we started telling these stories, and it was amazing. It was almost as if we were back in college. And that kinship that we shared is just, it was just like it still was there and we could pick up from where we left off. That's what stories do. Community produces stories that we share together. But on the other hand, story creates community. That when we share a common story, a common background, that makes us united. And the best illustration I can think of this is family reunion. Probably your family, like my family, ever so often has a family reunion. And when we go to our family reunion in Arkansas, there's a lot of different kinds of people that come. Now, none of them come looking for a spouse, even though it's in Arkansas. I know what you're thinking. But there's a lot of different kinds of people. from different places. But what binds us together is we have a common story. We're all a part of the Clower lineage, the Clower clan. That's our story, and that makes us into a community, at least for a temporary time. And I think that's a good way to understand church. We gather together on Sunday morning because we have a common story, right? We believe that God created the world and that God has redeemed the world through Jesus Christ. And we believe that someday Christ is going to come back and he's going to judge the world. We believe that story, and that makes us church. That makes us a community of believers. Story creates community. And if we're going to continue this community, if we're going to continue being church, if we're going to continue being the family of God, it requires of us that we pass down the story. We have to pass down the story because it's what makes us a community. Psalm chapter 78 tells this very idea. If you have your Bibles, open to Psalm 78. This psalm, Psalm 78, is one of five psalms in the Old Testament, or at least in the book of Psalms, that are referred to as storytelling psalms. The reason why they're called storytelling psalms is because the writer talks about key historical events in Israel's history. He tells the stories, so to speak, in order to make a point that he's trying to get across in the psalm. Now, in Psalm 78, there are two particular stories that the writer is trying to get across: the Exodus and the wilderness. Now, he talks about them in reverse order, but I'm going to talk about them in the real order, Exodus and the wilderness. He talks about in the psalm how God brought the people of Israel out of Egypt and how they were being oppressed in slavery. And God, with his mighty hand and his outstretched arm, he came and he brought the plagues. The psalmist doesn't mention all 10 plagues, but he mentions about 8 of them. And he reminds the people of that story, how God redeemed Israel, brought them out of Egypt, how they came to the Red Sea, and he parted the Red Sea and allowed them to go on dry land. And then he talks about the wilderness and how when they went into the wilderness on that journey, that whatever they needed, God provided. If they were hungry, God brought manna from heaven. When they were thirsty, he gave them water from the rock. When they wanted meat, he gave them quail from the sky. He just sustained them the whole way through, protected them from enemies, brought them to the land of Canaan, and allowed them to be his people. The writer is reminding them of these stories. But as he tells the stories, there is a constant refrain that he continues to go back to. And that refrain is that despite God's redemption in the Exodus, despite God's sustenance in the wilderness, still the people of Israel rebelled against God. You can see that all throughout the psalm. If you look at, for example, verse 10, it says, "They did not keep the covenant of God and refused to walk in his law." Or verse 17, "Yet they still continued to sin against him, to rebel against the Most High in the desert." Or later on, verse 22, "Because they did not believe in God and did not trust in his salvation." Or later on in verse 32, "In spite of all of this, in spite of all what God did for them, they still sinned and did not believe in his wonderful works." Over and over again, the psalmist, as he tells these stories of the past, he reminds the listeners that Israel, even though they experienced God's redemption, even though they saw God's goodness, still, they were unfaithful. And this brings up a question. Why? Why did Israel continue to go after its own path instead of the path of God, despite God being so good to them? It's a question that we experience today, too. This past year, the ministers and elders read through this book together, Essential Church. It was a book kind of sounded the alarm about how young adults are leaving the church because they don't consider the church to be essential in their lives. Even though they grew up in the church, they're leaving the church. In fact, the writers quoted a statistic that said that about 50% of children that are raised in the church between the ages of 18 and 22 they leave the church. Now, that's a scary statistic to me. Every summer, our family goes to Camp Blue Haven with the youth group, and Lindsay and I will teach a Bible class for the high school students. And this past year, we had about 24 students in our class, most of them 17, 18 years of age. And it was scary to me to think that here were children growing up in the church that within the next 4 years, half of them, if the statistics bear out, half of them will not be faithful. They will not be connected to a church. That's alarming to me. And it brings up this very question. Why do young people who know of God's goodness, experience God's redemption as a child, have seen God's hand in their family, why do they choose to go their own path? And I know there are many of us here who could share out of experience that you have a child or a grandchild or a niece or a nephew who have followed that very story, that they were raised in the church, a part of the youth group, and then something happened between 18 and 22, or something happened in their 20s or in their 30s, and now they're not connected to a church anywhere. They've left the faith. Why does that happen? Why does that happen? And that doesn't just happen with young people. That happens with adults as well. That's a struggle that we see in our Hope ministry. We see people come to our Hope ministry and experience freedom in Christ, and they become clean and sober, and we're overjoyed, and then after a few months, they go right back into the mess from which they came. And why does that happen? Why do they experience God's redemption and then go back to their own selfish ways? We see that with other adults as well who experience God's goodness at some level and then decide to be selfish and act like Israel. Why does that happen? Why do we live like Israel, rebelling against the very God who has redeemed us and sustained us all throughout our life? And the psalmist answers the question. In the introduction of Psalm 78, he answers the question. He starts off the psalm by saying, "Listen, O my people, gather around my feet and let me tell you a story," he says, "a parable. And I want you to hear this story," he says, "so that you'll pass on this story to your children and pass it on in a way so that your children will pass it on to their children, children that haven't even been born yet. And the reason why I want you to do this," he says, is verse 7. "That they should put their confidence in God and not forget the works of God." If you have a pen or a pencil, I would underline that phrase. "And not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments." That was the problem of Israel. That's the problem of young people when they leave the church. That's the problem when adults go back into the sinfulness that they were in previously. It's because they forgot. They forgot how good God is. They forgot about what God had done for them. Memory loss, amnesia, spiritual dementia, call it whatever you want, but they have forgotten that God had redeemed them and sustained them throughout that life. And when you forget that, you forget your story. You forget your story. And church, I want you to hear what I'm saying. When a Christian forgets his story, when the church of Christ forgets her story, that we belong to God and God has redeemed us and God created us and God's going to judge us, when we forget our story, we cease to be the people of God. And what ends up happening is we start listening to other stories. Stephen Shoemaker said this. He says, "Our lives must find their place in a greater story, or they will find their place in some story." There are other stories out there besides the story of God. There's a story of pleasure. And it says that whatever makes you feel good or makes your heart sing, that's what you ought to do no matter what it is. And that story's being told by our media and our culture, and some of us are listening to that story. There's a story of success. And that story says that if you want to live a fulfilled life, the way you do it is you get a good job and you earn a lot of money and you live in a very comfortable house with nice things. And some of us are listening to that story. There's a story of fear that says that if someone is different than you, looks different, acts different, thinks different, you need to be afraid of them and uncomfortable of them, and you need to be prepared to protect yourself at all costs, use violence if necessary. And that story is being told. Some of us are listening to that story. There's a lot of stories out there. And pretty soon we start to listen to them, and we forget our story, God's story. So how do we make sure that we're listening to the right story? How do we make sure that our children are hearing the story of God and not some other story of our culture or story of our world? How do we make sure that we're passing on the story of our faith? Well, the psalmist answers that question too. My favorite phrase in this psalm comes from verse 6. And it's in the Message translation. Eugene Peterson says this line in translating verse 6. He says, "Know the truth and tell the stories." Know the truth and tell the stories. In other words, if we're going to pass on our faith, if we're going to make sure that our children and our grandchildren and our friends and our neighbors are hearing the story of God and not some other story, then you and I, we must become storytellers. We've got to become like that grandfather and gather our children around, gather our grandchildren around, gather our friends around and tell them stories about our faith. Share it with them so that they're hearing that story, the story that makes us the church. That they're passing it on to the next generation. Know the truth and tell the stories. And it's for this reason that I'm very thankful this morning for our children's ministry. I'm thankful for Becca and for all the teachers that volunteer their time. I know there's a lot of you. Put a lot of time and effort into teaching our children and letting them know the stories of the Bible we talked about this morning. It's for this reason I'm thankful for our youth ministry, for Matthew and Lauren, and for all the adults that help out and walk alongside of our young people, going on retreats and mission trips and teaching classes and other things. It's for this reason that I'm thankful for our Frogs for Christ ministry, and for Joe and Emily Bullock, who aren't here this morning, but I'm still thankful for them, and Chris Jeter and some others who have been involved in that ministry, adults that have been involved in that ministry. I'm thankful for that. And the reason why I'm thankful for those ministries is because there are storytellers, folks. There are storytellers. They're passing on the faith to the next generation. If you want to live out our theme of being a church that shares a story, here's a place to start. Teach a children's Bible class. Mentor one of our young people. Host the Frogs in your house, because in those events, you're telling the story. Know the truth and tell the stories, because it's the story of God that makes us the church. And when we forget that story, we cease to be the church. But in order to be a storyteller, you got to know the story. You got to believe the story. And you got to live the story. And maybe you came this morning and you're not doing that. You don't know the story. You don't believe it. And you're not living it. And you can't be a storyteller if you don't do those things. And our ministers and elders are going to surround this building, and maybe you need to recommit your life. Because you want to tell the story. You want to pass the faith on. You want to know it. You want to believe it. You want to share it. You want to live it. I encourage you to walk to one of our elders and just say, pray for me. I want to recommit my life to pass on the story. Maybe you're ready to become a child of God, to be baptized into Christ, to join your life story with God's story. Baptism is where it happens. And if you're ready to do that, during this song, just come to the front. If there's any way we can help you, please come as together we stand and sing.